Support for podcasts of Medical Monday comes from Vassar Brothers Medical Center, the only hospital between Yonkers and Canada offering Makoplasty, the newest robotic surgical system for hip replacement and partial knee resurfacing. health-quest.org/VBMCortho.
Hello and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Who needs sleep? Who needs ice cream? We all need sleep. Statistics show that not getting enough sleep can put you at greater risk for physical and mental health problems and pose public health concerns. The Better Sleep Council calls the pervasive lack of sleep in our society a public health epidemic. But getting more sleep may be easier said than done. We have a sleep specialist, not just any sleep specialist, but a very special sleep specialist in the studio today who can answer your questions about sleep and sleep disorders. Dr. Michele Gorla is certified by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Sleep Medicine. He sees patients at Ellis Hospital Sleep Disorders Center and specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of sleep-related health problems like sleep apnea, insomnia, narcolepsy, restless leg syndrome, and parasomnias. Dr. Gorla earned his medical degree from the University of Florence in Italy. He completed his residency and fellowship at the Cabrini Medical Center and at Montefiore Medical Center in New York. Dr. Gorla, what a pleasure. Great to have you here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, you're very welcome, and we're delighted you're here with us. Well, the phones are already lining up, but I asked you a question, but right before we went on, I'll ask you another one now. What about coffee? Too much coffee during the day? What's the latest thinking?
It depends on the person. Some people can really tolerate large amounts of coffee. If you have been drinking coffee for a long time, you develop some degree of tolerance.
Interesting.
But some people are extremely sensitive. I just saw a patient today who has developed such a poor tolerance for coffee that he cannot even have a drop. And that started after taking a stimulant for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. So some people should stay away from coffee. Other people can tolerate it well. I would say the main problems with coffee is sometimes cardiac rhythm problems, sometimes gastroesophageal reflux disease, other times insomnia.
Yeah. Okay, Dr. Gorla, let's go to Mary Jo in Wurzburgo, New York. Okay, Mary Jo, you're on.
Hello?
Hello, Mary Jo, you're on.
Yes, hello. Thank you, doctor, for taking my call.
Sure.
The question I have is there any connection between late-night television watching and difficulty in sleeping?
This is a very important topic. It's called the sleep hygiene. There are some things that people do and they are conducive to sleep, but other things that are really working against a sound and a satisfactory sleep. And watching TV mainly in bed is always not recommended, even less so if you have already a sleep disorder. Usually when you watch TV, you are aware of time, and that by itself is not a good thing. If you are trying to fall asleep watching TV and you know what the time is, that generates anxiety, because most people who feel that they're not sleeping enough hours, they end up becoming anxious about
the
late hour.
Profound.
So this is comes with the device itself, but then the content of the program may be as important. So it makes a big difference whether you're watching something relaxing or something that excites you and makes you hyper-aroused. It makes a big difference whether you're watching TV in a different room or in your bedroom in bed. And one of the basic tenets of sleep hygiene is that you shouldn't be spending time in bed awake doing things other than sleep for a prolonged period of time. So I'm not sure whether the question is related to some problems with insomnia that you might have, or is a general question. But if you do have a problem with insomnia, I would definitely recommend not to spend any time in bed watching TV.
Just for the hell of it, Mary Jo, why do you ask the question?
Well, the reason I ask the question is just recently I've developed difficulty in falling asleep at night. And when trying to figure out if I'm doing anything differently. The only thing I could come up with is that I've kind of recently developed a habit of watching TV before I go to bed.
But I loved, didn't you, the analysis from the doctor about, you know, staying up past, you're supposed to go to, I get up at 3:30, so I'm supposed to get 8 hours or 7 hours, and I know that I have to go to bed by 8 o'clock. So if I'm watching TV or something else after 8 o'clock, I'm saying, uh-oh, this is creating a problem for me. I love that.
Right.
Mary Jo, yeah. Thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
And let's go to Johanna in New Paltz. Johanna, you're on.
Good afternoon to you. Thank you for taking the call. I wanted to say that I'm now 86. I have for 8.5 years had the great good fortune of listening to wonderful music. I've talked about this before, but this is liquidmindmusic.com, and the music is very slow, very quiet. I listen in the evening before when I go to sleep and during the night whenever I have to go to sleep again. And I have had 8.5 years of sound sleep. I'm in a great deal of pain. I'm very handicapped. And this music has been researched at Kansas University and various other places.
Now, Johanna, is there a question here?
No, it's not really a question, but I wanted to say that preparing yourself for sleep and with something that also in the night gives you, if you can't sleep, with pain and legs. Yeah. Leg cramps, dear God.
And you know that this doctor is a particular expert also in restless leg syndrome. So
yes,
he sounds
wonderful. Thank you very much.
Oh, Johanna, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. Let's go to Jim in Matamoros, Pennsylvania. Jim, you're on.
Given a choice, why do some people prefer to be night people rather than day people?
There is a wide variation of normal, as you may have realized yourself, you know, talking to acquaintances or family members. And this has been confirmed by medicine. There is no really a definite normal. I think people who vary too much from what's common, they get in trouble because they are not synchronized with schedule, time schedule, school schedule. There is a physiologic variation. The same person goes through different phases depending on their age. When you are a teenager, you go through a phase where you tend to sleep late and get up in the morning late. And this has been recognized as a societal issue. There has been an official recommendation on the part of many medical groups to adjust the high school schedule based on this. So this is a phase that many young adults go through, or teenagers, and may stay with you later in life, and you may become what we call a night owl. So some people choose jobs depending on that characteristic, and it becomes normal for them. Other people are miserable because their job does not allow that. So there is no definite normal. The sleep quality is perfectly adequate for these people if you let them sleep at the time they want to sleep. It's a problem with the clock inside your brain. There are some cells that are our natural clock, and they determine the circadian, as we call rhythm. Mm-hmm. If you go later in life, most people will adjust their clocks in the opposite direction. They will have the tendency to go to bed early and wake up early in the morning.
That's
again,
yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean that they don't sleep well. It's just that their clock has changed.
And just for the heck of it, what about all those people who are on work for places which say, okay, you work tonight, but you're on the day shift 2 days from now?
Yeah, this is a big problem because they don't have the time to adjust. There is a much higher incidence of people who have excessive sleepiness when they change shifts as opposed to people who stick to one shift. And we have many patients who, unfortunately, in order to maintain their jobs, they have to accept these variable schedules. It's a big society problem, and there is no good solution except for, sticking to a schedule all the time.
Jim, thanks for the call. Appreciate
does
it.
Does melatonin affect them differently?
Melatonin, you ask? I'm sorry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, Jim. We are up against a break here, so we're going to have to cut it off at that.
Okay.
But we'll come back and we'll answer. Sure. Stay tuned. We'll answer the melatonin question
yes.
first. Okay. Here we go. Let's take a break.
Support comes from Nathan LaTower Hospital, Gloversville, New York, less than 50 miles from Albany, offering minimally invasive procedures for back pain with Dr. Ja'an Shen, NLH.org. Poughkeepsie Farm Project, connecting food, farm, and community through organically grown CSA shares and farm-based education for children and adults. Farmproject.org. Woodstock Day School, an accredited independent school dedicated to providing academic, socially, and environmentally mindful education from nursery school through grade 12. No such thing as an average student. WoodstockDayschool.org. O'Reilly, Talbot, and Oaken Associates, providing environmental engineering services for Springfield and Western New England. OTO-ENV.com. And Water Furnace Systems, a green heating and cooling system. Geothermal energy, an alternative energy source, waterfurnace.com for dealer locations.
Okay, we are back with Dr. Michele Gorla, who is a sleep specialist and who, as you can hear, is profound in his remarks. Doctor, the last question we had a run out on was melatonin.
Melatonin is a natural substance. It's produced by the body, by the pineal gland or epiphysis, and it plays an important role in maturation of adolescence and has been used for some years as a sleep-promoting agent. It's not a very powerful medicine for insomnia, but has its role mainly when you deal with circadian rhythm abnormalities. So if you have a shift worker or if you have a jet lag moving across time zones, you can use melatonin at night to promote sleep. It's even better used in combination with light therapy in the morning to reset your inner clock.
And it is sold across the counter, I know that.
Yes.
So do that. Okay, let's go to Kate on the Mass Pike. Okay, Kate, I hope you've pulled over. Go ahead. Now, with that said, ask your question.
Hi there.
Hi, Kate.
I've been a night owl my entire life. It's getting progressively, quote-unquote, worse. That sometimes I go to bed at 4 or 5 in the morning. And it's getting progressively annoying to everybody around me. So... do you have any recommendations about how to readjust my clock?
This goes back a little bit to what we're talking about during the previous question. There are ways to reset the clock, but it takes time, it takes effort, and it takes discipline on your part. The best way to approach this is a gradual moving of the bedtime, keeping the uptime in the morning fixed. So no matter how many hours you sleep, you should be able you should get up at the same time. So you can start moving your bedtime by half an hour earlier every night with the assistance possibly of melatonin. And then when you get up in the morning, you should have a lamp to do light therapy. Unfortunately, we're living in a part of the country where the light is not as abundant. So many days a year, it's overcast. We don't have that bright, shining sun. So the amount of light you can get from natural sources is limited. But there are lamps that provide enough brightness for a relatively short period of time every morning to try to reset your clock.
And what do you do with the light, doctor?
So you expose yourself to the light for 35 to 40 minutes every morning.
Put it in your eyes, or what do you do?
You don't have to stare into the light.
Yeah.
You can use this light while you're doing something else, like getting ready for work, depending, you know, shave or eating or reading. It has to be a constant repetitive action, but not a very long one.
A special kind of light, or is it just any light?
You want to avoid like any commercial light, because they don't produce enough brightness, and they may be bad for your eyesight. So there are some lights that are better equipped for this purpose. I'm not sure that the FDA would approve any specific lights, but there are some companies that are more reputable than others in this field.
And for Kate, she has to get back into bed half an hour early, whether she likes it or not. Isn't that right?
Yes, I would try, you know, to do it gradually and keep the morning time fixed. So you go through some sleep restriction for a while. But it may be worth.
Okay, where do I find guidance on the type of light to choose?
I don't know. Short of calling a sleep disorder center, can go online. There are some websites. There is the American Academy of Sleep Medicine website that may have some more specific.
Sounds reasonable.
Brands.
The American Academy of Sleep Disorder.
Of Sleep Medicine has a website, and you may get some information on more specifics than
sure.
I can give
that
you.
That would be better than Al the Huckster. So that's good.
Yeah.
Hey, Kate, you've had your share. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Right. Let's go to Sam in Bennington, Vermont. Sam, you're on.
Yes, I have a few questions. I'll be real quick. One thing, I have an elderly mother who's in her late 80s, and she suffers from leg cramps, and I tried to educate her, stating that, well, maybe your body's calling out for water that you take before going to bed. And at the same time, she has a weak bladder that what keeps her awake is she's constantly going to the bathroom to relieve the water that she intakes. So it's a double-edged sword, per se. Any thoughts on that?
So leg cramps, sometimes real cramps, meaning, you know, painful contracture of the muscle.
Yeah,
and they
the
may
muscle,
be
so much that it wakes her up from her sound sleep that she's got to virtually get up out of bed and walk it off. And then
so sometimes it's hard to tell the difference between a light cramp and a restless leg. But from what you describe, it sounds like a real leg cramp.
Right.
One of the possible causes would be some electrolyte imbalance, meaning possibly low potassium. And I don't know if she's taking any diuretics, water pills.
Does quinine help, a little bit of quinine?
Yeah. So first you want to eliminate the possible cause of this. So if there is an electrolyte imbalance and you take quinine, that may not be the right approach, because you haven't eliminated the cause. And the quinine may not be effective. Once you have eliminated any possible medical known causes, then you can try tonic water with quinine. And it's, you know, over the counter. You take it, you go in a grocery store and you look at the bottle, and usually says on the label that there is quinine.
A little bit, but it's just the idea of trying to constantly, you know, indulge and saying, you know, she'll try it, then she won't try it, then she'll try it. And
yeah, it doesn't have to be a large amount, like a half
a
glass
a
night. Now, the question of the weak bladder, that's another thing that may mean different things to different people. Some frequency at night, it's very common. If it goes beyond a reasonable limit, then you ask yourself why. Is it because the intake of water is too high at the bedtime? Is it because of a medication? Is it because of another sleep disorder, like sleep apnea? Sleep apnea is notorious in causing what we call nocturia, which means that you get up at night to urinate. Now, being a woman, I wouldn't count prostate hypertrophy as a cause of this, but that's another differential that we have to keep in mind in men.
So are the medicines that deal with too much getting up for urinating?
There are medicines that act on the bladder if it's too irritable. So that means that your bladder may not be full, but you feel the stimulus to go. That's one approach. The other approach is sometimes if you make the sleep more sound, you don't wake up as much. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that you end up wetting your bed.
How do you do that? How do you make it more sound?
If there is a condition that makes you wake up, and then once you are awake, you feel that you have to go to the bathroom, then you correct that condition. Again, it could be some problem with the restless legs or problem with the night cramps or sleep apnea. Mm.
Now, with me, I live with my parents, who are aging parents. My father has Alzheimer's, so basically I sleep with one eye closed and one eye open to keep an eye on him, no pun intended, if he should happen to get up from a dream and direct him back to bed. And that usually happens sometimes 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. So my time clock, sometimes I get up automatically real quick, just, you know, because my body is trained to wake up 2, 3 o'clock in the morning to adjust. And, you know, sometimes it affects my day, sometimes it doesn't affect my day. And, of course, naturally, we're both Paisans, Italians. A little bit of Zambuca wouldn't hurt either.
Using alcohol at night, I can talk about that now. It's not a good idea. Because,
well, neither is the NyQuil or Dimetapp or cough syrup, which I'm quite sure
Sam, there are five people behind you, so I don't want to have
okay, I'll let you go.
I don't have a debate, but go ahead. Doctor.
Yeah, just a rapid answer here. Some over-the-counter medications that contain antihistamines, they may be helpful short-term, but long-term because they have their own side effects. As far as the alcohol is concerned, I want to be very clear here. Many people self-medicate with alcohol. Not a good idea for different reasons. Number one, alcohol seems to promote sleep because in the short term allows you to go to sleep faster. But once you are asleep and the alcohol level decreases in your bloodstream, you go into a mini withdrawal. It's not like a delirium tremens, but the brain becomes hyper-arousable and you tend to wake up more often than without alcohol. So that's
okay. Thank you for your time.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Sam. Okay. And let's go to Jody in Vernon, New Jersey. Jody,
yes,
you're
on. I'll be brief, Alan. I have a question, doctor, that I get up every 2 hours consistently. I'm 67. I go to bed at 10:30. I put on Mozart and then I go to sleep for a couple of minutes and I'm up. So I'm up every 2 hours, And then it takes me an hour to get back to sleep.
For how long is this been going on?
Oh, gee, for at least 5 years now.
Okay, so we're talking about the chronic condition. It's not that you can track back to some specific event that triggered this. Is that
right,
correct?
Right.
So we go back to what we were talking about before. There are a few things that you have to do first. Number one, to identify any possible medical or psychiatric causes of what we call maintenance insomnia. What you describe is maintenance insomnia as opposed to onset insomnia.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have problems falling asleep necessarily, you have problems maintaining sleep.
Well, no, it takes me usually an hour to fall asleep.
So you have also that additional than onset insomnia. So there are a few causes of insomnia that are not strictly related to your sleep physiology. And you have to eliminate those. And there are medical causes like anemia, like neurologic conditions mm-hmm. or breathing conditions.
Mm-hmm.
There are medications that can induce that. There are psychiatric conditions. And there are other sleep disorders other than insomnia. And we talked about the restless legs. We talked about sleep apnea.
I was tested for that. I don't have that.
Sometimes it's... you have to do some digging, really, to identify whether you have them or not.
Yeah.
Once you have eliminated all these possibilities, then the next step is sleep hygiene. So mm-hmm. you have to do all the right things
right.
during the day and the bedtime.
Right.
And you have to eliminate any possible stimulants.
Right. Well, how about naps?
Naps are really not recommended if somebody cannot sleep at night. So part of the sleep hygiene, we always tell patients, do not nap no matter what.
Oh.
Do not nap no matter what.
Are you a
what.
Napper, Jody?
Yeah, I take a 15-minute nap every day because I'm exhausted by 2 o'clock.
Well, 15 minutes doesn't sound terrible.
See, 15 minutes is not bad, but any interruption in your wakefulness slows down the build-up for a need to sleep.
Right.
You have to think, the wakefulness as a time where you accumulate some toxin in your body that puts you to sleep at the end.
I believe that.
And we haven't identified that toxin, but we know about some substances like adenosine builds up in the blood and maybe what triggers the deep satisfactory sleep, the one with the big electric waves that we call stages 3 and 4.
Yeah.
So, you have to eliminate all possible stimulants, avoid
naps. I know,
naps.
I do. At 12 o'clock, I cut off caffeine, no sugar, any of that. I watch no TV. I read all. We read all night. And I just don't understand. Every 2 hours, I get maybe 4 to 5 hours sleep if I'm lucky. Yeah. And it's all interrupted sleep.
So the next thing you do is some degree of stimulus control, as we call it. So you eliminate any time in bed awake. And that has to be very drastic. Because, again, we act like Pavlovian dogs. If we correlate a certain stimulus with a certain outcome, even at the subconscious level, we're not going to beat this. If you are in bed and the brain learns that it's okay to be awake in bed, there's nothing we can do to overcome this situation.
So let me ask you this, and this has nothing to do with Jody or her behavior, but obviously it's been kicking around with me. What about sex in bed? Now, that takes some more energy. Does it keep you up?
Usually when we say you don't stay in bed unless you sleep, we make two exceptions. One is sex. Second is when you're sick. Uh-huh. So that I should have qualified that.
Well, because
that
a lot
statement.
Of people fall asleep after sex.
Yeah.
It helps them fall asleep.
Yeah, it may be beneficial to put you to sleep. And definitely, I don't think it can be counted as an activity that to eliminate from bedtime, because I was thinking more of reading, eating, watching TV, listening to music.
Now, you sleep experts quite frequently use the word arousal. You don't mean arousal sexually. You mean arousal.
No, it's an electroencephalographic jargon. That means that the brain waves change in a certain way that tell us that you switch from one stage of sleep to another, or usually a shallower sleep, or even better, to a wakefulness
now
state.
You were describing when you came in a new device that you can buy for your iPhone or put it on your wrist. What is that?
Lately, they have been commercializing what are actigraphs. These are devices that have been used in some medical labs in research for many, many years. Now they are widely available. Patients can buy them. And they are like bracelets, and they allow you to keep track of your activity during the daytime and extrapolate at night lack of activity as sleep. So those are devices that may allow you to quantify your sleep. There is a condition which is called sleep misperception, which means that many people who sleep maybe shallow sleep, they believe that they are not sleeping at all. When you test them in the lab, you see that what they tell you is not correct. And maybe the wider use of these devices, these actigraphs, may help many people to put in perspective what their sleep problem is.
But there's still a quality of sleep issue, isn't there?
There is still a quality of sleep, that's true. But between zero sleep and bad sleep, there is still a difference. When people come and tell you, I haven't slept in a week, there are conditions like that, but they lead to death within months.
Yeah, I knew this woman whose mother always claimed to her that she never slept. And she'd get to her house and she'd say, I'll just sit down for a minute, and she'd sleep for 3 hours.
So there is an entity called familiar fatal hypersomnia, which was described in Italian families, now has been described in families throughout the world. And it's a neurologic disease and leads to death, but it's a serious neurologic condition with other symptoms. People who don't sleep at all, you have to take it with a grain of salt. It may be very fragmented, superficial sleep, not good quality sleep, but not sleeping at all is quite unheard of.
Yeah. Jody, you said you were going to be on for a very short time, and you may be the all-time champion for a long time.
I'll get off.
So
thank you.
Thanks so much. Appreciate
Thank you
it.
Very much. Bye now.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We're going to take a short break, just seconds, and we'll be right back.
support comes from New York Oncology Hematology for more than 30 years providing comprehensive cancer care in your community with locations in Albany, Latham, Troy, Rexford, Amsterdam, and Hudson. NewYorkOncology.com. Manchester Fall Art and Craft Festival, October 3rd through 5th in Manchester, Vermont. A juried craft show with music, food, and entertainment. CraftProducers.com for details. Ellis Medicine and Bellevue Women's Center, providing preventative heart disease screenings for women, ellismedicine.org. Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, offering organic and local groceries, working to build a healthy and sustainable community, berkshire.coop. And Haldora, Rhinebeck, women's clothing, fall collections, wool town coats, silk blouses, home textiles, Kinross sweaters, hand-row undergarments, new weekender location in Millerton, haldora.com.
And we are back. Whoa, Zach got stuck up on me, and we're back. Thank you, Zachary. And let's go to Keith in Rexford, where everyone is a king. Okay, Keith, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Hi, doctor. I'll be real brief on this. Recently, I, like my everybody else, I had a problem sleeping, and my doctor suggested that I go to the drugstore and buy a bottle of melatonin, which I did. I take 1 3-milligram tablet of melatonin an hour before I go to sleep, and I wind up getting the kind of sleep that we dream of. It's deep, it's restful, and I wake up completely rested. I have no more problems getting a good night's rest or nothing. My question is it okay to take? How much can you take? And why does it work? And what? Before you answer, I noticed that there was a couple of instructions on the bottle to take for 25 days and then to stop for 5 days and then to resume again. But it is the kind of sleep that I haven't had in years, and I wanted to know, why does it work, and how much am I allowed to take?
And can you drive the next day?
Absolutely. Wake up completely refreshed. No tired, nothing. Completely refreshed.
Yeah, the good news is that melatonin is one of the safest medicines we have for insomnia.
So there is no rebound effect when you stop
None.
It, meaning that you don't feel sleepier. There is no definite contraindication in driving the following day.
Hey, Keith, yeah. let him finish. Go ahead.
And this extends to a prescription medicine that mimics melatonin, is a melatonin agonist, which is a chemical that works on the same receptors as melatonin, which is called Ramelteon, or commercially known as Roserem. And this is the only medicine for insomnia which is not a Schedule 4 or, you know, controlled substance. Because
so is it prescribed? Or
it is prescribed, but it's the only one that does not require particular attention for abuse or side effects. Mm. So I think you're in a good shape. The reason why I think they put the warning about stopping the medicine after 25 days is that the long-term effects of these medicines are not well known, because they have not been used long enough. And as a general rule, when we use something for sleep, pharmacologic, which we don't like to, we try always to take the medicine away after a while, because the hope is that we are not treating a chemical imbalance, we're treating some behavioral issues, and the medicine just gives you time to correct whatever was going on. Now, if you are in that small category of people who do have a chemical imbalance, maybe you have this deficiency of melatonin, maybe you have to stay on melatonin indefinitely, but that's very hard to prove.
Okay, Keith, thank you for your
call. All right, thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Mark in Albany. Mark in Albany, you're on.
Hi. First, I wanted to start by saying I don't have an issue sleeping. It's actually my wife who does, and it's turning into an issue for me. We got married in July, and since then we've been sleeping in the same bed every night together, and her worst nightmare has come true, and she's starting to have restless leg like her father does. So I've been noticing more and more that I get woken up in the middle of the night by a swift kick to my leg. I'm just trying to figure out, is there anything that I can do? She's already tried cutting out caffeine, sugar. Is there any course of action that I can take as the bystander?
I just take the opportunity, since you mentioned sugar, and I heard the sugar word another time, another caller. There is a little bit too much emphasis on this sugar. I mean, it's good to cut off carbohydrates for many different reasons, but there is too much emphasis on sugar being a stimulant. So if somebody thinks that they're going to get stimulated eating extra sugar, I think they're going to be disappointed. But the other way around, I wouldn't try to blame sugar for this specific aspect. The question is a very good question also, because it brings up the problem of restless legs being a couple issue, not just the patient who has problems falling asleep or staying asleep, but also the bad companion, the bad partner. That's another good reason to treat somebody. Many patients do not have any symptoms from restless legs, but their bad partner does. This is grounds for treatment. So I want to
divorce.
Or divorce.
No.
What I'm saying is I would encourage people who are suffering from being kicked, to come forward. There is treatment for this. Now, as you said, the first order of business is to try to eliminate any known stimulants, and usually nicotine and caffeine. Alcohol can be playing a role. Some type of exercise at the wrong time of the day may be playing a role. And I'm vague on purpose because I don't have an answer. Not everybody has the same issue with the exercise. Some people find some forms of exercise useful to prevent restless legs or treat them. And the same type of exercise may be the wrong type for another person. So she has to learn to recognize what type of exertion and muscle use is beneficial to her. And usually we don't like exercise late in the day. Sleep physicians, they always tell you, you get to get regular exercise, but first thing in the morning. If everything fails, then you have to look into causes of restless legs. And in women, many women have restless legs because of iron deficiency. So a test should be done to identify either full-blown anemia or just a more subtle iron deficiency. And if that's identified, then the therapy would be iron supplements. Other causes are back issues. Other causes are kidney problems, meaning not urinary tract infections. I mean kidney function. So if everything is ruled out, then there are still medicines that somebody can use. And the medicines are tolerated well. There are different choices nowadays. So I think there is a good chance that she's going to get relief.
Okay, now let me say this to you, Doctor, and to Mark. Well, first of all, Mark, thank you very much for your call.
Absolutely. Thanks for taking it. As a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Great. Thanks, Mark. Now, we have a lot of people on the phone, so, Doc, I want to go fast if we can.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that very much. Let's go to Mike in Pittsfield. Mike in Pittsfield, you're on.
Yeah, hi. First off, I wanted to say that I have one of those natural light lamps. It was prescribed to me for seasonal affective disorder. And it's by a company called Duralux.
Spell.
D-U-R-A-L-U-X. And I found it on Amazon for $50.
Okay, go ahead. Mike, hurry up.
All right. Also, I have trouble waking up in the morning, like a hypersomnia sort of thing. I didn't know if there were any suggestions for helping me to wake up.
So hypersomnia just means that you tend to sleep too much in the day, and that may be the result of many different conditions. So more investigation needs to be done. I cannot just say that this is primary hypersomnia. It may be the result of other conditions, most likely sleep apnea.
And I know there's a sleep clinic near you at the Berkshire Medical, Mike, and you might check in with them.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. Right. Let's go to Ann in Niskayuna. Okay, Ann in Niskayuna, you're on.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call, Doctor. Sure. I'm going to get right to it. My fiance of 8 years has horrific sleep. He has restless leg syndrome. I have to separate my body from his in bed because he's 70 pounds more than I am, and a soccer player, so I'm afraid I'm going to get really injured at one point. It's just sleep is a huge issue in our relationship. He always wants to take naps every day. He doesn't sleep through the night. He said he's never slept through the night, even as a child, but he's able to function at a pretty high level. He's a nuclear physicist, so he can use his brain. I'm just concerned that it's getting to the point where the sleep is getting worse. He's 40 years old. I'm trying to convince him to go to a doctor because, you know, I want to have something done, but I don't. I'm wondering what can be done for someone who has so many sleep problems.
Many times the person has one sleep problem that manifests itself with different symptoms. So I wouldn't be too pessimistic about having too many sleep problems. I mean, the scenario you describe is a common scenario. We see people like that every day, many times a day. So I would be optimistic that definitely something can be done, but he should be evaluated and formally studied with a sleep study, which will check for the amount of restless legs and identify other concomitant problems like sleep apnea.
Now, Anne, you're right down the street from the doctor. So
yes, I'm actually wondering where he practices. That was going to be my next question.
In Ellis Hospital has a sleep disorder center, which is located on McClellan Street.
Okay.
It's part of the Ellis.
And what's the number for your practice, your telephone number?
So it's 243-5337.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ann.
Okay. Bye.
1-800-348-2551. Allison in Vernon, Connecticut. Okay, Allison, you're on.
Hello. I had a question. I had a hyperthyroid, and I don't know if you know anything about it. The doctor knows anything about it, but...
Yes.
Your body's running in overdrive, and
yes,
there have been times that I have been awake for 4 days on end. And I had half the thyroid removed, and I'm still having trouble. I was just curious if you might know why.
Yeah, I think the first thing to do is to verify that your thyroid function is normalized. Removing part of the thyroid when there is something left behind that produces too much hormone, like a hot nodule, that may not be enough. There are medications that can keep your thyroid underactive intentionally. There are extreme cases that you have to give radioactive iodine to somebody and wipe out
yes.
Completely the thyroid. That's done usually with cases of cancer that produce thyroid hormone. I'm not saying you belong to that category, but you can go all the way in eliminated, completing the thyroid function and replacing it with a pill. It seems that if you have problems maintaining a normal thyroid function, some of your doctors should be a little bit more aggressive in trying to rein in the hyperactive thyroid.
They seem to think that it's a hypothyroid now because the surgery was performed.
Okay.
Surgery was initially performed. They didn't go in because if it was a hyperthyroid, they went. I'm a 17-year survivor of third-stage breast cancer. So they thought it could have been cancer.
Yes.
And that's why they went in and they removed. Yes, it was swollen cyst. It was interfering with swallowing. But I am still having the same.
Okay, Allison, since we're going around a couple of times, I want to give the doctor a last chance here. Doctor?
So the underactive thyroid, the hypothyroid, usually is not associated with not being able to sleep.
No,
it's associated
I have,
with the excessive sleepiness.
Right, I have the diarrhea, you can't sleep, and the sweating all the time.
Yeah, that sounds like more hyperactive thyroid.
You don't
yeah.
have to go back in to have surgery again. There's pills that can be given to...
It depends on what's causing it. I mean,
okay.
Of course, if there is something that needs to be removed surgically, that may be indicated. But there
okay.
are pills, yes.
Okay, Allison, we have to leave it there. We got four people behind you. Fair is fair. I want to try to get everybody in. Thank you.
Isn't exercise before bed also help you fall asleep?
Not before bed. I would recommend it first thing in the morning.
That's when I do it.
Thank
you, Allison.
Thank you.
All right, let's go to Stan in Poughkeepsie. Stan, you got to keep it short. Go ahead.
Very short. Doctor, I have two quick questions. One is, I've been diagnosed with complex sleep apnea,
yes,
both the central and the obstructive.
Yes.
I also, many years ago, was diagnosed, and I'm being treated for myasthenia gravis.
Yes.
Is there a connection between the two?
I would say most likely not. What complex sleep apnea is, in case you know people wonder, the most common cause of sleep apnea is obstructive sleep apnea, which is a collapse of the upper airway when you sleep, and that's usually associated with a large neck, but not necessarily so, or a narrow airway. When you treat somebody for obstructive sleep apnea, sometimes the patients develop a component of central apnea, which means that the brain does not give the signal to breathe. That's what we call emergent central sleep apnea or complex sleep apnea, which is treated slightly different than sleep apnea. You use still a CPAP machine or a BiPAP machine, but it's a slightly different device. Now, central sleep apnea, pure central sleep apnea, is common with patients who have some neurologic conditions, usually stroke or cardiac conditions like congestive heart failure. Myasthenia, to my knowledge, myasthenia gravis is not associated with central sleep apnea, is more associated with obstructive, because with myasthenia what happens, there is a weakness of the muscles because of some malfunctioning neurotransmitters. Yes. So it's more of a peripheral neuromuscular disease.
My last quick question is, I read articles that certain foods do help you fall asleep. Such as, I've read three or four medical journals that say bananas because of the potassium, a teaspoon of peanut butter. Do you subscribe to any truth to those?
Yes. I don't think it's the potassium, the bananas. They think it's the serotonin more than anything else. I would subscribe with one caveat. If you have gastroesophageal reflux, you should not be eating anything before sleep. You should go to bed with an empty stomach. No late snacks.
Thank you very much, Doctor, and thank you, Alan, for taking the call.
Thanks, Stan.
Bye now.
Lee, can you go fast, Lee?
I can. I wanted to know, my circadian rhythm has changed so substantively that I have marched forward from midnight to 6, 7 in the morning to 5 to 10 in the morning. Is the quality of rest changed by the hours that you sleep?
Usually not. If your circadian rhythm is the only problem, usually you get all the stages of sleep. And if you analyze somebody who's on a regular schedule, they have more REM sleep during the last part of their sleep time, so that equals 3 to 5 a.m., but if your circadian rhythm is all altered, I don't think you can make that assumption.
Okay.
I think it's as good.
Lee, that's got to be
you.
It. Thank you, dear. We are just about out of time. I wanted to thank a number of people who are still up there. Kathy from Egremont, she said she had restless leg syndrome and takes magnesium and it works. Does that sound right, doctor?
If it works, I would continue to take it.
Yeah, why not? Why fool with success? Okay, and Eric from Port Jervis, re-sleep paralysis.
Paralysis.
So what do you got for that?
Okay, sleep paralysis is sometimes normal. You wake up in the morning, you cannot move. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have a condition. It could be an indication of narcolepsy.
Oh, narcolepsy. And again, narcolepsy is?
It's a brain condition where a neurotransmitter is lacking, and now we're getting better understanding on how to treat this condition. It gives you sleep attacks.
Right? You fall asleep all day?
Yes, it could be as bad as sleep apnea in terms of sleepiness.
Uh-huh. Okay, and then finally, Diana from Kingston, she has sleep apnea and can't wear the machine. I think a lot of people are like that.
Alternatives would be to try a different type of mask, because there are many, many different masks and headgear.
Getting better all the time.
There are dental appliances, which are devices that you put in your mouth at night like a retainer, and they move the jaw forward. There is surgery, which usually we do not recommend in adults unless they have failed other modalities. And there is weight loss.
Okay. Hey, Diana, sorry we couldn't get to you. We're out of time. I want to apologize to those last three who called in. I'd also like to thank Dr. Magali Gorla for joining me today. For more information on Dr. Gorla and his practice, visit WAMC.org. Support for Medical Monday comes from Toprasin, developed to provide relief for those living in pain associated with neuropathy and fibromyalgia. Toprasin.com. And thanks again for joining us today on The Vox Pop. Our engineer has been the incomparable, I mean that, Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Colleen O'Connell. We love her to death. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall, who is doing a great job. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.